I hope so. Okay, it's the 7th of February, and we're ready to start mutual fund, yay, investments for the masses. Well, we have to do the security handout, look at the portfolio, and also we want to make an announcement. Oh, don't forget the investment club today at 12 o'clock, next door to 22, those of you who are interested. Assignment number one, well, assignments, there's two, are due next Thursday. If you have any questions, you know who to contact, get in touch with me. Okay, who's got a good joke? Anybody have a good Kathleen? No? Anybody? Did I tell you about the alligator that walked into the bar?
Yeah.
How about the bear?
Yeah.
How about the mushroom?
Yeah.
I did? Did I tell you about the mushroom? Okay, how about the sandwich? See, I didn't tell you about the sandwich that walks into a bar. So the sandwich walks into a bar. Have you heard this one before? No? And orders a beer. And the bartender looks at him and says, sorry, we don't serve food here. See, because he's a sandwich, right? And they don't serve food. Get it? Oh, good. Good. We just want to make sure. Oh, you have a joke.
Kind of a joke.
A what?
Kind of a food joke.
It's a what joke?
Kind of a food joke.
Food joke. We're not going to create a hostile environment. Okay.
So a Buddhist monk is walking around New York City.
He's walking around New York City?
Mm-hmm.
He's walking around New York City,
he
Buddhist monk.
He walks up to a hot dog vendor. And he says, make me one with everything.
Make me one with everything.
And here's the thing. So the food vendor says, hey, that's going to be $4.75. So the Buddhist monk hands him a $100 bill. And the vendor pockets it. So the Buddha says, hey, where's my change? And then the vendor says, but change comes within.
Change comes from within. And then there's another one. No, there's another one.
I know, but I don't remember.
Okay, okay. The other one says, well, how about a tip? And the Buddhist monk says, make yourself one with everything. I like that. That's a good one. That's a good one. Okay, so we on how'd the market do it, by the way? Let's take a look at not good today, huh? Well, it's been great the last few days. Well, not mean yesterday, but the last week or so. Oh, see, volatility. All right, now here on Tuesday, we created a portfolio. Now you can do this on your own. I already have me Yahoo. You can do this on your own. And today in the investment club, I think, I'm not sure, we have to, depends on how long it takes us to get officers and all that stuff. But we might show you how to do this today in the investment club. So you sign into Yahoo or whichever one you want, like MarketWatch or Big Charts or lots of places. And no, don't do that. And then you get this portfolios. Where's my? There it is. So we want the investment club. We want the spring 2019. And it turns out, well, today we're down. Today we're down a bit. But it turns out we went back to the very beginning of the semester, January 28th, and the market last week was actually pretty good. So it turns out we're already up almost 4%. Aren't you excited? Okay, now where's our stinker? So I want performance. I want Yahoo. They keep making Yahoo worse and worse. And so far, the marijuana stock has been the killer. And that's what we should expect, dear students. We should expect this marijuana. Who was the idea with that anyway? Okay. We should expect this thing to be. But look at Power Pacific Gas and Electric, right? People thought they were going to go bankrupt. They are going to go through bankruptcy, but how they go through bankruptcy is going to determine whether or not this thing becomes zero by the end of the semester, or we skyrocket when the bailout comes. But Boeing's doing well. Who else?
Aren't electric companies like doing worse now that like solar panels are out?
You know, I don't think so. But that's a good. Is it a long term? Issue for them, a long-term threat?
Most likely. More houses are converting to it.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. But they still, yeah. The thing is, they're still going to need natural gas. I don't know. It depends. Over, you know, I would think this would be something 20, 30, 40 years is going to take. Because still, solar doesn't amount for a whole lot. We could, certainly, and California is in the lead on this, and some other states and countries, but we could certainly use a whole lot more solar in South California. Yeah?
So with like cars like Tesla and solar panels coming up, how would you be able to weigh out the risk and whether or not it's worth it?
Well, again, Gianni, I mean, this is something we could spend a lot of time on. But I'm thinking it's going to take decades. You know, I'm thinking it's going to take a long time. Not always. You know, things. Sometimes technology happens a lot faster than you think it's going to. Yes.
Being that I actually worked in the solar industry for a while, it's probably better to invest in the companies that are actually doing the production, because the government has contracts with companies like First Solar, for example, to do build-outs on actually government-controlled property all around the country, which is what I did from 2015 to 2017. And they're like guaranteed work, and they just keep going up and up and up. So if you invest in those kind of companies, they're going to have a lot of production because they're constantly buying stuff up, right? So there's probably going to be a lot more growth there than in the actual infrastructure itself, because it's going to take a long time, like you were saying. But the companies themselves, their stock is going to keep going up, because as it becomes more popular and people start seeing more of the benefits of it, they're just going to keep getting more and more contracts.
So First Solar is one of the major solar panel. They're losing money. But again, this would be something that you think is going to be long-term. But you never know. You don't know people's... People are starting to wake up. Just a few years ago, a lot of people thought that global warming was a Chinese hoax. One still does. He happens to be the president. But now a majority of Republicans even believe it, and they hate science, right? And so it might happen a whole lot faster, but I'm thinking it's going to take decades. And people say, oh, the oil companies are going to squash it. No, the oil companies, they're not worried. Oil is so important. Oil is such an important commodity that they're not going anywhere. Yes, Johnny?
Most scientists don't agree on global warming. Most scientists don't agree on global warming.
Most scientists?
Yeah, like it's like a huge divide.
My understanding is it's about 2%.
I think it's the other way around.
No, it's not denial. It's the specifics.
Something that's going to take decades, right? Yeah. I looked up this one website. I forget which one it was. But it shows that by 2099... I won't be around. 2099, our house will be really close to the ocean. Really close. So I think, hey, so my great-great-great-grandsons are going to be able to sell this place for a mint, you know. But so this is something that's going to take decades. But in the meantime, it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea for us to prepare, not because of global warming, but because it makes our economy more efficient. The fewer dollars we send overseas for oil, the more we can invest in ourselves, in my humble opinion. But everybody's got an opinion. And some people think, use more oil, use more coal. That's what we need, more coal. Okay, fine. All right, so now, what else are we going to do? Oh, right. All right, so now, take out your first packet and go to page number 5, because we'll do the securities type handout here. So let's go to business 123. And this, where did it go? There it is. Securities types examples. Here. No, that's not what we want. Where's security? There it is. Securities type matching handout. So this is what we studied last week. So this is checking for comprehension. Do not take a whole lot of time. Just quickly match the security with the description. Match the type of investment, security being a fancy word for financial investment, with the actual security you think it is. Okay, so take about just a couple minutes to do that, and not even, because this is something you must know. You must memorize this. So if I called you up at 2 o'clock in the morning and said, what is a security that represents ownership in a corporation, investors receive dividends and capital gains or capital losses, you must be able to say, in the middle of your sleep. You understand? That you must know. Okay, and in the meantime, let's get chapter 4 queued up. Okay, so who else is in? 8:35 for our finish Thursday. Okay, Adriano's here. Yes. Thought I saw him. Adriano, you here?
Yeah,
you are. Okay. Thomas Gutierrez? No. Neo? Crandoy? Here. Amy? Frank Kala? No. Okay. Christian Marin? Jonathan Moore? There he is. And Eric Padilla is here. Audrey Tintero, there she is. And Azucena is here somewhere, there she is. Romel is here somewhere. Joshua Smith. Okay, Joshua. Randall Walker. Okay. And Guillermo Mata, here. I saw him looking. Oliver Sigali. And Edgar Delgadillo. Okay, anybody's well. I got Nick. Didn't I get Nick? I got you, Nicholas. I think I got you. Yes.
So that extra credit for the Super Bowl, the
that you gave us? That was 121. That's next class.
Oh. Yeah. But do we turn that in?
Yeah, turn it in today.
Okay.
Okay, you got them? You got them. Hope you got them. Okay, so what are investments with very little risk, correspondingly very little return, place to park your money, emergency fund, short-term securities? What do we normally call them?
Cash.
Cash. People call it cash. So the real term is short-term investment, short-term instruments, short-term securities. What are speculative securities that derive their value from an underlying asset or security? Options and contracts, futures contracts, options and futures are the biggest example. What are these?
Derivatives.
Derived. Derivatives. They're very dangerous. We'll go get to them at the end of the semester. What are securities that represent ownership? Equity? Stocks, right. Stocks. Equities. You hear people say equities, not stocks. What are fixed income securities that represent loans to corporations, municipalities, such as state and local governments, and the federal government? Bonds. You receive interest and a promise to repay. Your return is fixed for the most part. What are securities designed to offer the stability of fixed income investments with the opportunity for capital growth of equity?
Hybrids.
Big examples, preferred stock, convertible bonds, convertible preferred stock. And then what are investment companies that pool the investors' money and invest in a diversified portfolio of securities? Right, you get diversification and professional money management. So these will be on the exam. I want you to write it. Now, you don't have to copy this verbatim, but one or two or three sentence description in case somebody who's totally out from left field says, well, what the hell is a bond anyway? I hear about these things. You're going to describe it in about two or three sentences, and then later on you're going to be able to describe it in detail once we go through bonds. But that's what we're looking for. We want you to have the right numbers, the right descriptions for somebody who's just for the first time hearing about these things. So I'm going to ask you to burp them back on the exam. Is that a deal? Yes? Okay. You don't like it? Tough. It's a benevolent dictatorship here. Okay. I like that word. All right. So now we're ready to tackle investments for the masses. Because, dear students, if you are a worker in the United Snakes of Armenia, the cost of the probability of you being offered some kind of employer-sponsored plan is very great. And some do, but few will offer you any kind of help. They don't want to offer you help unless they have contracted with somebody who's a broker, who has the insurance and is licensed, because you're not supposed to give recommendations to... Any extras in the back? Because sometimes there'll be extras and just pay. You got to leave. Okay, good luck. Knock them dead. Baseball. Knock them dead. Take that curveball. The only pitch I could pinch was the forkball. Anybody ever tried throwing the forkball? It's a beautiful thing when it works. When it doesn't work, it's a home run. But that ball goes, and when it works, it was so cool. But when it didn't work, it's like, okay, there's another one. Okay. That was the only, I could never, never pitch the curveball. I would always. What? You hold it like a fork, and you have to get a really good topspin going. And then it basically, yeah, and then it goes, and if it doesn't go, it goes, whee. Unless, yeah, anyway, that's enough for baseball. Anybody else pitch in here? Anybody ever try pitching? It's a very difficult thing to do. Those people, their arms. Ugh. Anyway, enough of that. Mutual funds! This is so cool, mutual funds! Where's my clicker? Here we go. As we said, you're going to probably be investing in these things through your 401ks, 403bs. Review the investment company that is an mutual fund is an investment. That's the legal term. You will not hear this term unless you work in the industry. You will almost always just hear mutual fund. But mutual fund is just one type of investment company. There are others, but it's the most important type. They hold your money, your investors' money, shareholders' money, and in a diversified portfolio of securities, you get two wonderful things, professional money management and diversification. And each fund has a specific objective that is outlined in the prospectus, which we'll take a look at, which is almost useless. And there are almost 12,000 of these things out there. Now, are there 12,000 different types of breakfast cereals? It seems like it, right? But no. Are there 12,000 different types of cars? How come there are 12,000 different mutual funds? Well, we'll see why. We'll see. We'll try to get a handle on the industry. It's almost impossible. Or I guess it is impossible. Do your best. First of all, they're very profitable. And there's a reason why they just exploded. But as we said, you're probably going to have access to these things through your retirement accounts, your 401ks, 403bs, IRAs. And you are going to be the investment guru for your coworkers, your friends and family. And you're going to be so awesome. All right? And it's a very important responsibility. So study hard, dear students, to bring honor and glory to Southwestern. So here's my graphic. Remember this thing from last week? We little people, we give our money to the people in the top hats, the professional money managers, the portfolio managers, the mutual fund managers, the sometimes called counselors, the investment professionals. And they create this pool of money in the billions of dollars, because there's millions of people giving their money to these people. And then they buy the stocks for them. If they buy the stocks, it's called a stock mutual fund. If they buy the bonds, it's called a bond mutual fund. And if they buy the short-term instruments, the short-term vehicles, the short-term investments, cash, it's called a money market mutual fund. But, as we said, you hear just people say money market. Cool? You like that? And then we see the beginning of this explosion. It's just the beginning, where a mutual fund might invest in stocks and bonds, a balanced fund. So, look at what happened to the mutual fund industry. There were mutual funds before the 40s. They started in the 1920s. They actually were borrowed from the Scottish, what are called unit investment trusts. So the Scots have been doing this for a long time. So have the Brits, but the Scottish investment trusts were the model that the Americans started using in the 1920s. And it wasn't until 1940 that the Congress came together and said, look, we've got to regulate these things somehow, because the states were kind of going, what's going on here? And the banks, and not the banks, the IRS were going, what's going on here? So in 1940, there were 70 mutual funds. 30 years later, 350. 10 years later, 600. 2,000. And then between 1990 and 2000, it just exploded. And now we're up to, as of December 2017, if those of you are into statistics, here's the mother load. ICI, Investment Company Institute. That's their trade group. It's a nonprofit, but it's funded by the mutual funds. And it comes out in May. So I always pour through the darn thing, and we'll maybe it's over 12,000 by now. We'll see. But now, this is what we're looking at. Almost 12,000 of these things. In 1980, 5 million Americans owned funds. And that was about 3% of their financial assets. By 2017, December, almost 102 million Americans in 53 million households, which is about 45%. It had reached almost 50%. But it went like 48 point something or other. Now it's down to 45.4. So as of December 2017, we're looking at $22.5 trillion holding 24% of household financial assets. Remember, most people, their biggest asset is their house, if they own a house. Now mutual funds are the largest financial intermediary. What does that mean? They hold somebody else's money. Followed by banks, commercial banks, and then life insurance companies, the invisible bankers. So the mutual fund industry is immense, and it is going all around the world. The United States is not the only country that's doing it. And so it is, why? Because it makes sense for most people. Most people don't have the time, the inclination, don't want to educate themselves, and of course they have to learn to deal with their emotions to do their own investing. So these people invest for you. Make sense? Plus, they have tremendous resources. The folks in the top hats, they have entire teams of research analysts. And some companies have offices all around the globe. So how are you going to compete with that? So take a look at the growth in terms of assets. In 2007, $13 trillion. Look what happened in 2008. It was a tough year. And then you see them growing. Like almost over doubling between the Great Recession in 2017. And this includes, we'll take a look at open-end, closed-end, and what are called ETFs. So notice the drop in 2008. So what are the advantages? You have to be able to, again, if I call you up at 2 o'clock in the morning, which I'm not going to do, you have to be able to say to somebody, to say to me or somebody, you get two wonderful things from mutual funds. So you're going to burn this in the back of your eyelids, right? I'll tell you another joke. You get professional management and you get instant diversification. Right? Your $100 buys 25 cents of IBM and 30 cents of Home Depot and 25 cents of Pacific Gas and Electric. So this is good. Diversification is good. Some people might say, diversification is for wimps. It's for sissies. You should be concentrated and you'll do better. And they might be right. But you know what else could happen? You could do a whole lot worse, right? So, yes, that's a trade-off. There's no such thing as a free lunch, the economists like to say. But it's good, in my humble opinion. Diversification is good. And then these people are getting paid very, very well. So some of them are very good and others are not so good. And so we'll discuss that later on as we get into who can beat the market. But another cool thing is all you need is $25, $50 a month. They don't want you to send them a check for $25. But if you say to the insurance company, mutual fund company, or through your broker or whatever, I'm willing to put $50 a month away and sign up for electronic delivery, or take it out of my paycheck automatically, they're very happy for that. Because they don't want you to be sending them a check every month for $50, because it costs them $5, $10 just to deal with the darn check. But electronically, pennies. So is that a cool thing? And people will say to me, well, I don't have enough to invest. I said, how much is your cell phone payment? And they go, $80. It's supposed to be $40, but I download a lot of ringtones. You can put $50 a month into a mutual fund, all right? You can do that. But then they can't give up their cell phone. And then most importantly, for the vast majority of us, the PETA factor. Anybody remember the PETA factor? Remember the PETA factor? Pain in the right. Once you've chosen your mutual, and that's the hardest part, choosing a mutual fund, because there's so many choices out there, and we're going to see that over the next week or so. Once you've chosen the mutual fund, it's their job. Right? They They're the ones who are doing it, right? Do you build your own car in your backyard? No, once you've chosen your car, that's the easy part. That's the hard part. Now the easy part, you buy it. They build it. Do you make your own shoes? No. Should you do your own investments? Maybe. Maybe after you've taken Business 123 and you see what you're up against and you realize that it's really not that hard, but at times it ain't easy, you might decide you want to do your own investments. But for the vast majority of us people, no, let's let them do it. That's their job, and some of them are very good at it. So now, what are the drawbacks? What are the disadvantages? Are mutual funds, not-for-profit organizations? No. Everyone should say no. Are mutual funds non-profit organizations? No. They're in it for the money, right? So you're going to be charged. And many people, they know they're being charged. And if their financial representative says they're not being charged, you need a new financial representative. They just don't really understand how. You're going to understand how. And this is why you're going to be so awesome. When you're in that meeting with your fellow coworkers and the guy in the three-piece suit with the Porsche tries to tell you that this is a phenomenal piece of investment for you, and you say, well, look at all these fees. What's going on here? You're going to get them. You're going to get them. So some mutual funds charge what's called a sales load, a sales commission, a sales charge. They go by various names, but the one that's typical is the sales load commission or sales transaction fee. And we'll see that there are front-end loads, there are back-end loads, there are all different types of loads. But then there are some that are no-load funds. No-load funds, which don't charge this fee. All mutual funds are going to have annual operating expenses. All of them. And this is what we need to key on, because this is the one that amounts to the most over time. In fact, sometimes, you buy a fund with a sales charge, but it has low annual operating expenses. It winds up being much less over time than one that doesn't have a sales load. So you have to be careful. And then some or many mutual funds just do not match the market's performance. And I hate the word performance, but that's what you're going to hear. I like to use the word results or rewards. Because performance, it reminds me of something on the stage or something. it's not a theatrical event. It's a process of investigating, making alternatives, and following through. And it turns out that many don't match their respective markets. And we'll see why. There are various reasons, and sometimes they're just not supposed to. You look at some funds, they say, well, it hasn't beat the S&P 500. Well, it's not supposed to. It's far less volatile than the S&P 500. It's going to not. If it does beat, oh, my goodness, congratulations. So nothing's perfect, right, students? Every investment we're going to see has advantages. Every investment has disadvantages. So now, we would not be bothered with this, but because you are introduction to investment students, you need to understand this, especially if you plan to move out into the industry. There are two major types, or at least there were for decades, open-end and closed-end. The open-end funds, they're the majority. In fact, when people say mutual funds, they are almost exclusively referring to open-end mutual funds. So unless the person says closed-end, or now ETF, it's an open-end fund. Now, what's an open-end fund? This is a type of investment company, type of mutual fund, in which investors buy shares from and sell them back to the mutual fund itself. There's no limit on the number of shares they can create. So you have $1 billion. You walk down to your mutual fund company and say, here's $1 billion. They'll say, oh, thank you. And they'll issue you new shares. And then when you want your money back, you say, I want my money back. They'll give it to you. And those shares are redeemed. Those shares are destroyed. So an open-ended mutual fund is continually creating new shares when people put money in and continually destroying those shares. Investors can buy shares from purchase, sell shares back to redeem the investment company at any time. And notice that this constitutes about 80% and of the 20-some trillion it's almost $19 trillion. So by far, these are the biggest ones out there, the open-end mutual funds. The closed-end are the other side of the coin here. There are a set number of shares. It has a fixed number of shares. And they are created when the mutual fund is organized. So we have created this new closed-end mutual fund. There are 10 million shares. And that's it. There's no more. They're not going to create any more unless they go through what's called another offering. But they're going to have 10 million shares. Once those shares are sold to initial investors, if you want shares, you have to go to your broker, and your broker has to find another investor who's willing to sell their shares. And this is how a stock works. We're going to get to Chapter 5. This is how stocks work. So they work like a stock. After all the original shares are sold, you can only purchase the shares from another investor. They're bought and sold on the open market. You incur brokerage commissions. Closed-end investment companies are not as popular. They never were. They are becoming less and less popular. As of December 2017, there were only 530 of these things as opposed to what? What was the number here? 9,300, right? Holding only $275 billion. So here you got these people. They got almost $19 trillion with a T, and these people got $275 billion. So these closed-end mutual funds are dwindling. They're becoming less and less popular. Yes?
Is there any benefit to having
We're going to take a look at the advantages and disadvantages. But yes, as a matter of fact, there is a benefit. And it's kind of subtle. Most people would never understand it. But if you're a closed-end mutual fund, you don't have to worry about investors. Well, you have to do your best and give good results. But with an open-end mutual fund, if you do really, really, really well, people start sending you. This is an industry. You know, success breeds success. So you start doing really, really well. You're going to see people start shoving money towards your mutual fund. Now you got a few more $1 billion. You know, you only got $2 billion to begin with. What do? Buy more of what you own, or go out and find new alternatives? It can be difficult. And hence, what some companies will do is they will close a fund. They will say, no more. We don't want any more investors. We're happy with what we have. The same thing happens on the downside. If your performance or results are not very good, what are people going to start doing? They're going to start pulling their money out. Now, maybe the market's not very good. Maybe it's not a good time to sell. But you have to come up with the cash, so now you have to sell investments that you really didn't want to sell. So a closed-end fund is much easier to manage from the people with the top hats point of view. It's much easier to manage. Whereas the open-end, but there's ways to get around it. Like, so we close the fund. Some companies, what they do is they add more professionals. They don't close the fund. They just say, hey, we'll just add more professionals. And then make the mutual fund a bunch of mutual funds. You know, one person runs this part, the other person runs this part, the other person runs this. They're my favorite, actually, the ones that have a team. And we'll get into this later on. I'm going to go ahead of myself. But the ones that have a management team, not a committee, death by committee. Anybody have to go to meetings? My apologies. I'm well known. I'm not the only one in campus of people. I hate meetings. I hate when you just sit around and talk. And if it were up to me, if I were the king of the college, which I'm not, meetings, everybody would have to stand. No sitting. You think how long the meeting's going to last, right? Whereas if you have a team of people, they work together, but one person might be buying Microsoft, the other person might be selling Microsoft, and that's perfectly okay. They love the good companies, in my humble opinion. T. Rowe Price, American, they're the good companies. There are others. Wellington. They like that dynamism. They don't want everybody to agree. They don't, because everybody can't agree. I mean, if you have to have everybody agree, it's called death by committee. You know, you only have a few choices that nobody will be happy with. Okay, I went too far. Anyway, so those are the two big, open-end and closed-end. Now, the net asset value, you'll hear NAV, net asset value. And the book wants you to learn how to do this, and I don't care if you learn how to do this because it's done for you. But every day, at the close of the market, at 4 o'clock in New York time, or 1 o'clock our time, the mutual funds must tally up what they have. They add up the value of the securities, And then they subtract any liabilities. In other words, this person, we need to pay the rent, and this person wants their, you know, $500,000 or whatever. And then you divide by the number of shares. Open-end mutual funds are sold at net asset value, some of them with a sales charge. And since closed-end mutual funds are bought and sold on the open market, their price usually either reflects a premium or a discount to the net asset value, often a discount. But it's not much. It might be 25 cents. So that's very rarely priced at their net asset value. So here's the formula. Don't bother writing it down. It's not that hard to remember, but it's not important because it's done for you. But you take the value of the fund's portfolio, subtract out any liabilities we have to pay, and then divide by the number of shares. So if the mutual fund securities that they owned were worth $10,050,000, I just made that easy, and we owed $50,000 for whatever, we would have $10 million divided by a million shares, or a $10 NAV. And the offering price, and you only hear this if you work in the industry, you're not going to hear this if you don't work in the industry, is the net asset value plus any sales charge. So if this mutual fund had a 5% sales charge, then the person would actually be buying the mutual fund shares at $10.50. That's straightforward? I think it's straightforward. But again, most people are never going to worry about that. If you're going to work in the industry, you're going to know it. So let's get back to your question again. Who was that? You asked me a question. Your name again? Neil?
Thomas.
Where's Neil? He's right there. He is. Look at him. What are the advantages and disadvantages? Well, with the open-end mutual fund, there's no market forces. You don't have to go through your brokerage firm. You go either directly to the mutual fund or through a representative. Very popular law, but as we said, the disadvantage is that large purchases or redemptions can make the management of the fund more difficult. For that reason, they can close the fund to new investors or start, you see some of them, they'll close the fund and then they'll create another fund with the same name and call it the same name two. But it's the same fund. Why do you do that? It doesn't make any sense. But anyway. And then closed-end investment companies, you must pay the broker's commission like a stock. You buy them. You have to find another investor. Now, you don't do that. That's the job of your broker. But they're often sold at a premium or discount to NAV. It's not much, 10, 25 cents. But the one thing we said, Thomas asked, is that they're easier for the investment manager. So I say, which one do you or would you prefer? The chances of you actually using closed-end mutual fund, I don't know, you might decide, but most people are just going to stay away from these things. Now, here comes the new boy on town, about 25 years old, but lately has become the darling ETFs, exchange-traded funds. They are a hybrid. They are a combination of open-end and closed-end. They're an open-end mutual fund, which means that there's no limit to the number of shares they can offer, and the share when they're sold, they can destroy them. But they trade on an exchange. That's why they're called exchange-traded funds. Thank you. So you still have to buy them. You buy them through your brokerage firm, which means you had to pay a commission. So for people putting $50 a month away, does it make sense to pay TD Water, TD Ameritrade, that's like Ameritrade, TD Waterhouse, I'm dating myself. But does it make sense to pay your broker, Scott Trade, whatever, $10 to buy $50 worth of shares? No, it's dumb. It doesn't make sense. So what many of the companies have done, in fact, Fidelity, and I know Vanguard does it now, if you buy their ETFs through their brokerage firm. Now, it's not the same company. They're two different companies, but they have the same name, right? Fidelity Investment Manager, FR, no, Fidelity, what is it called? Fidelity Management, and then Fidelity Brokerage Firm. So they have the same name. But if you open up an account at Fidelity or open up an account at Vanguard, they will waive, not this waive, but what's the word? WAIVE is a fancy way of saying we don't charge you. They will not charge you the brokerage firm. Fidelity is a very good marketing company. Is that cool? Make sense? Now, what's the cool thing about these things? Well, normally, with an open-end mutual fund, you could only buy them once a day. That was it. You buy them at the net asset value at 4 o'clock at the end of the day. Whereas exchange-traded funds can be bought and sold throughout the day. So some people use them as trading vehicles. John Merriweather. Some people use them as trading vehicles. And the way they're designed now, some of them are going to come up with more expenses, but they have very low annual operating expenses. And why is that? We'll see as we continue why. But some of them have very low annual operating expenses. They're becoming incredibly popular, and we'll discuss why later on. Am I going too fast? Yes, Efren.
So are these, is it safe to say that these are designed to encourage trading?
You know, I'm sure that the companies would go, oh, dude, of course
trade
not.
Funds
yeah, well, some people do. I mean, I don't know anybody who does.
I'm trying to imagine why these exist.
Well, we'll see. We'll see some. I'm sure they'll never admit to that. I'm sure they would never.
They wanted to give you another option other than just
individual stocks.
Because that makes the market less.
Well, where's my ETF then? Here he is. You want to answer that?
What's his question?
He's saying, were these things designed to encourage trading?
Well, I go with ETFs to access markets that I can in the U.S.
Well, you can do that with open-ended funds.
Yeah, I can do that too, but there's a brokerage fee over there. And I just,
not necessarily.
Well, yeah, not necessarily, but almost always.
Well, it depends. It depends on who you go with. But the good companies, yeah, you're going to want to... The good companies are going to... Well, no, some of them will let you bypass them. Anyway, but he's saying he wants to use them for something different. He wants to be able to... Because now there are ETFs to... Just little slice. We want the... we want companies that are based in Pago Pago. Wherever that is. Where is that place? Hang on a minute. Maybe we'll answer your question. I don't think... Anybody in the ETF industry is going to say, oh, yeah, we designed these so people would trade them all day long. State Street they were the big ones, and then BlackRock. But I think you're right. I think they were meant to be. It appeals to some people. But, of course, you don't have to use them. You don't have to use them as trading vehicles. You can buy it, sit on it for 10 years, sell it, that's.
Well, I think the biggest advantage to the ETFs, just like a mutual fund, one of them is the iShares from Mexico, so you can buy into different companies at Mexico, and it makes it a lot easier for you to access, because if you were to individually buy shares of one of the companies that
right,
offer through this
right.
ETF, you would have...
You have brokerage
money.
Yeah, right. Plus, you have to move your dollars into yen, have an international brokerage account. Yeah, so we'll see that, but you can get that with open-ended mutual funds too, and I'm sure some closed-end.
Things you're describing though are built-in advantages to
trade more.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they would ever admit to that, Efren. But I think you're right. I'm not going to accuse them. Okay, so take a look at the ETF industry. In 2006, there were 359, 269, 3728. There's almost 2,000 now. The ETF industry is exploding. And look at the assets. 423, 608, bingo, 2008. And then off to the races. So now $3.4 billion. The ETF industry is exploding. And as Carlos says, there's an explosion of different types of ETFs, so where you can buy an ETF that's just designed for Mexico or just designed for Peru or designed for Canada or whatever. So how are they regulated? How do we do over time? If I go too fast, just go like this. Okay. The industry was born basically before 1940, but as we said, some of the states, the feds, they were a little weary about how these things were being worked on. Because when you make money, what does the IRS want? Damelo, right? Give us our impuestos. Give us our taxes. But the mutual fund company said, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. We're making money for that person over there and that person over there. Go tax them. And the IRS, okay, well... In 1940, the Congress, the Republic rats and the demagogues got together. They played nice in the sandbox. They can do it again. They built up they created the Investment Company Act of 1940. And it is the foundation of the modern mutual fund industry, and it has worked very well all these many years. It defined what is called the regulated investment company, which is a pass-through investment vehicle. We are investing on their behalf. Go tax them. The shareholders pay the taxes, not the mutual fund company. Now, the mutual fund company is in it for to make money, so they have to pay taxes on what they make, but that has nothing to do, well, it has something to do with it. But it, if they do well, you know, more their investors are going to do well. But it's separate. The IRS taxes the investors separately. They must hold all their assets in stocks, bonds, and other traditional securities and avoid derivatives and other risky strategies. Lately, they've been getting around this. There are mutual funds that are doing fairly risky things. And I don't know how they got away with it, but the regulators the last 20, 30 years, the idea is that governments are bad. Markets are smart, and they know what they're doing until the Great Recession, and then the markets were stupid, and the governments were even stupider because the taxpayers wound up paying for it all. So I'm not too happy about this personally, but who am I? Just some goofball jumping around. An academic elite. I'm also a stockbroker. But hey, you'll see these. We'll try to identify a few of them. And most importantly, they must use no more than 5% of their assets when acquiring a particular security. Now, what does that mean? If you take 100% and divide it by 5%, what is that? 20, right? You must have at least 20 different securities. So if you have a stock mutual fund, you must invest at least 20 companies. If you have a bond mutual fund, you must at least invest 20 bonds. So it's enforcing diversification. Now, do most mutual funds companies have only 20 stocks? They have 100 or 200 or 300. So it's a little low, in my humble opinion, and some companies have tried to take advantage of that. In fact, there's a company called Janus, and I haven't looked at it in years, but it was called, I guess all around, called Janus 20, meaning we're only going to have 20 stocks. Is that a smart thing? Well, in my humble opinion, it's really, really stupid. Why do you buy a mutual fund? Everyone should say, why do we buy a mutual fund? And? Right, so here you're screwing that up. You know, you're doing, it's going to be great if they pick 20 good stocks. They're going to do well. And if they pick a few stinkers, oh well. So I like a mutual fund that has at least 100 shares of stocks. And then they must create an organization with checks and balances. Have you heard of checks and balances? We used to have it in our government. It's, you know, you have three different branches and then a fourth branch, which is now the enemy of the people, and they watch over each other. But here's the mutual. And now, this is from your book. I would have turned it upside down. But the shareholders, they put at the top, which I guess makes sense. And they elect a board of directors that must be 75% of people outside the mutual fund. And their job is to be your watchdog, if you're the shareholder. Their job is to watch over the mutual fund. Because the mutual fund is not a single entity. It is various entities. By far, this is the most important one. These are the people with the top hats. These are the people who make the investment decisions. But do they hang on to the money? No. The custodian holds on to the money. They hold on to the shares. So these people tell these people, you know, buy these shares. And they do it. And they hold on to it. There's a distributor that sells the shares to the public either directly or through brokerage firms. There's the transfer agents that actually do the transactions with the individual shareholders. And then there's an independent public accounting firm. You might have heard of Ernst & Young, PricewaterhouseCoopers. I just call it Pricewaterhouse, right? Any accounting fans in here? What's it called?
I don't know.
Okay. They changed the names. And then KPMG is another big one. And these companies, their job is to walk in the door and say, okay, you say you have 1,000 shares of Microsoft. Where are they? Okay, the custodian says, here they are. They're over in there. Okay, cool. And their job is to make sure that everything is copacetic. Make sense? Yeah? Okay, good. Now, these two next slides just go over what we, what we just went over. The mutual fund company, run by the board of directors, the investment advisor with their research analysts, their portfolio managers, the distributors, the custodian, the transfer agents, the public accounting firm. Why the large diversification of tasks and companies? Well, mutual funds are highly regulated in order to protect shareholders' investment firm from shareholders' investments from fraud, collapse. How often have you heard of a scandal at a mutual fund company? Right? Until 2003. What? But you want me to invest in an industry that is plagued with scandals? Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. And the truth is, folks, these people, they weren't doing things that were illegal, but they were obviously unethical. And many companies just said, no way, you don't do that. Don't do that here. You want to do that here? We'll screw you this way, or we won't let you. Some companies just said, no, you can't do this. And other companies said, sure, you can do this, but we'll charge you. So in 2003, some practices that were not quite illegal, but obviously unethical, were uncovered. Only a handful of funds and people were affected. Strong Funds, which is gone. Janus, a few people at Janus. Bank of Armenia had their own funds. Putnam, poor George Putnam, rolling over in his grave. And then Alliance, which is a very good company, folks. Two people at one of the funds were pulling this off. Now, what were they doing? It's kind of hard to describe, but they were basically stealing, you know, tiny pieces of pennies from their fellow investors. How were they doing that? At 4 o'clock at New York time, the mutual funds must decide. You know, must they gather up all the prices of the securities, how many securities they have, find out what the net asset value is, and publish that. And then that's the value you would have if you made that purchase that day. That's the value you would get if you bought or sold. And so, let's say the United States market just dropped 2%. Now, the world is more and more global. It's not perfectly correlated, but it's more and more global. So at 4 o'clock Eastern time, 2 or 3 hours later, Japan's going to open up. Japan's market's going to open up, right? So you sell your Japanese fund that day at 4 o'clock, you know, United States time, Eastern Standard Time. The next day, you assume that Japan's going to drop now 1% or 2%, and you turn around and buy it back the next day. Are you with me? Mm-hmm. Did you do anything illegal? Mm-hmm. No, but many companies said, don't do that. You know, that's not what mutual funds are for. Some companies just won't let you do it. For example, American, you do that, they say, you can't buy it back for 30 days. You have to wait 30 days. Right? And if you do that enough times, they'll say, go away. Right? Other companies will say, sure, you want to do that? Fine, we'll charge you 2%. And we'll put the money back into the mutual fund because you're screwing your other investors. Are you with me? Understand what's going on? So now, yes.
And the reason the price goes down is because they hold such a large portion of it?
They assume, they might be wrong, but they assume because the United States tanked, 2 or 3 hours later, Japan's going to tank. You with me? They might be wrong, but it more and more the world is global. So if you watch, you'll see that it comes in a wave and then it goes across Europe and then back to the United States, and the United States comes back up, and then the next day they recover. So they were using open-end mutual funds as trading vehicles. Now, if you want to do this with your ETF, have at it. Efren's, you know, right. These things are trading vehicles for some people. But for open-end mutual funds, no. So it was only a few people in the industry. The majority of companies never engaged in any of these shenanigans, and they're not. In fact, I thought Alliance was going to disappear. Putnam almost disappeared. Janus is still around. But Alliance wound up merging with somebody else. In fact, we're going to take a look at an Alliance fund today. And they've survived, because I was really sad about Alliance. I mean, they're a good company. Okay, questions, thoughts, ideas? All right? Now. Excuse me. We're going to talk about fees. Not fleas, but fees. But fees are kind of like fleas in that they are there, and you don't see them, but they bother you, right? And most people do not understand how they're being charged because they have stupid names like 12b1 fees. But all mutual funds, how's this guy? Not bad. Okay. All mutual funds. So this is going to be on the exam. But more importantly, you understand this, you are the investment guru at the 401k meeting where the goofball, the representative shows you your investment choices. All mutual funds have assignments. Annual operating expenses. All of them do. Some of them are quite high, some of them are quite low, but all of them have them. And the three major categories are the management fees, the 12B1 fees, what a great name, and then the other fees, or accounting and other fees. Now, I put a line here, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Okay. This is the money that's paid to the people in the top hats, and it ranges anywhere from 0.25% to 2%. What does that mean? Every year, you have $100 in the account, they're going to charge you 25 cents. Up to $2. That's what it means. The 12B1 fees are annual fees that defray advertising, servicing, and distribution costs of the fund, up to 1%. Wait a minute. Does Coca-Cola show you how much they're charging you to advertise? Does Nike tell you, hey, every time you buy a shoe, 25 cents goes to our advertising budget? Do they tell you that? Do the banks or the life insurance companies tell you that? No. But because of the Investment Company Act of 1940, mutual funds are required to show you their fees. And they do that in the prospectus. And this is a prospectus, and it is very, very useful. If you have insomnia at night, start reading the prospectus. And by the end of the prospectus, you'll be fast asleep. In fact, you might look at it and go, ooh, I don't want to look at that thing. So do you think the mutual fund companies really want you to understand how you're being charged?
No.
Not really. No, they do their best to. In fact, they have it. This is the new one. This is called the summary prospectus. The old ones were like 32 pages. This is about 8 pages or so, and they were.
The short version.
This is the short version. But now, do you even get this in the mail anymore? No. What do? Click here, tap here, to say that you've read the prospectus. So does anybody actually read these things? I got a little story. I was terrified. I knew I had my MBA. I was working at a brokerage firm. I didn't a small brokerage firm, and I worked for the boss, and he was really grumpy, and his name was Frank. And I would say, well, Frank, I'm kind of worried. He goes, you're not ready. People used to say, oh, Frank. They met me. When his daughter met me, she goes, you are Frank Piano? You are the saint who works with my father. I thought, no, he's not that bad. He fired me about 4 or 5 times. 3 weeks later, he called me back. And so he was a great guy, actually. But he'd say, you're not ready. So I was talking to the vice president, who was a woman, who was in the, she still is a woman, I hope. But she was in the industry for over 25 years, at a time when there weren't too many women in the industry. And so she could tell you horror stories about how women were treated. But she showed me this mutual fund because she knew that I was worried. I want something that's not going to be very, very risky. And so she shows me this one mutual fund, and she gives me the prospectus and the other material, and I read the whole thing. It's 32 pages. I read the whole damn thing. I know some of you skim over, but I went back to her, and I said, that's cool. I like this company. Could you show me the other one you were talking about? I want to read the prospectus. And she looked at me and she goes, you read the prospectus? I said, yeah. I read it cover to cover, pretty much. I'm going to put money with these people, shouldn't I know this? She goes, I've never met anybody who's read a prospectus. I've never read a prospectus. And so I thought, interesting. And now I understand more because maybe they'll just look at it. Ugh. But we're required to give them to you or click here. So, now the trustee fee, the accounting and other expenses. This is for the lights, the rent, the website, all the other stuff that doesn't fit in here. In the marketing and the management of the fee, of the fund. Now, these fees are only for Roth IRAs, 401ks. It's a separate fee because when you put money into what the IRS calls a tax-qualified account, IRA, 401k, educational savings account, health savings account, the IRS requires that you do not have the money. A trustee must hold on to it for you, and that includes mutual funds. So these people charge you $10, up to $30 a year, not per month, per year, $10 a year. It's a separate fee. And you can pay for it outside the mutual fund. But all the returns, all the performance that you see is net of these fees. It's after these fees have paid. Also included are trading costs, but they are not required to be shown. You can ask them what it costs, and it's usually in the annual report. So how do you know? Well, you can ask them, but more, I think, you just look at the turnover. The turnover is a measure of how often the fund turns over, how often the fund buys and sells the entire portfolio. 100% turnover means that they've gone through the fund in 1 year. On average, every stock or bond or whatever has been bought and sold within a year. A 50% turnover would be 2 years. A 200% turnover would be 6 months. Are you with me? Understand? I look for stock mutual funds and bond mutual funds that have a 20-25% turnover, 3, 4, 5 years. 30% turnover, and we'll discuss that later on why. And I'm going to ask you in your assignment for Chapter 4 to find the turnover. It's a little tricky to find. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard. And what you're going to see if you look at a money market is 400% turnover. And you go, well, wait a minute. Piano told me I want to look for 20-30%. Well, that's because if you have 100% or 200% turnover in stocks, you're not really investing. You're speculating. You're buying the stock for, you're renting the stock. You're not owning it. You only want it for 3, 6, 9 months, maybe a year. And so I like, that's me personally, I like mutual funds that keep it for 3, 4, 5 years, and why, we'll see why later on. But remember that a money market buys things that are going to mature in 30 days or 90 days or 180 days. So of course they're going to have a huge turnover because they got to go out and find new investments in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. So be careful. When I say that, you know, I like a 25-30% turnover, it's because we're looking at stocks or bonds, not short-term investments. Cool? Now, the load funds. There's the eternal debate whether you should have a load fund or a no-load fund. And you will hear people say, oh, you should only buy no-load funds. But then the people say, but I want an advisor. Oh, no, buy my book. You on the television or watch me on the boob tube, and I will tell you which mutual funds to buy. Anyway, load funds started out, they were the only ones, they started out as a way to pay your investment advisor. You needed help, you paid your investment advisor through the sales charge. And it was typically anywhere from 3 to 5 or more %, but that was how you paid your investment advisor. Also, that's how the fund distributor made money, one of the pieces of the mutual fund, the distributor. No-load funds came along 1960s, 70s, and said, look, why should you go with an investment advisor? Go directly to us. Usually 800 numbers before the Internet, now directly to the shareholder through the Internet. And you will hear people say, you should never buy a no-load fund. Well, you should never buy a load fund. Well, you have to decide whether you're wanting to have an investment advisor or not. If you, after this class, feel comfortable in choosing your mutual funds, of course you don't want to pay something that you don't need, right? Doesn't make sense. But if you need an investment advisor, this is how you're going to be charged. And so you're going to learn how to do this. And I know it's a pain in the neck. But people go, oh, what? I don't understand. But there are various types. A shares, B shares, C shares, F, FI, I shares, advisor shares. And then what the financial world, the financial media, likes to call true no-load. And I know it's going to bore you to tears. I apologize. But you got to know it. You've got to know it because you're going to be the guru for your friends and family and coworkers. The A shares were the original shares. They had an upfront fee, a sales charge, Yeah, an upfront fee, upfront sales charge. They normally, but not always, had lower annual operating expenses. And so the brokers said, you know, people don't want to pay that upfront fee. So the industry created a Class B shares with a back-end fee. So those are pretty easy to remember. B back-end fee. They hit you on the way out. And people say, well, what difference does that make? Well, they have what is called a contingent deferred sales charge. Say it. Say contingent. Doesn't it feel good when you say it? Contingent. I like it. It's like lumpia. Lumpia. Feels good when you say it. Feels good when you eat lumpia. And so what happens is they start off at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then the sales charge disappears. The industry then said, you know, some people don't want to pay the upfront fee. They don't pay the back-end fee. So we hit them with a C shares, which they used to call, but they're not allowed to call these anymore, broker no load. They used to call these broker no load, but they're not allowed to do that anymore. And they wound up, like the B shares, having higher annual operating expenses. I'm sorry, they're on this page. I'm sorry, here's the B shares. Here's the C shares. And they had no upfront fee, no back-end fee. Well, a little back-end fee if you take the money out within a year. However, they often have higher annual operating expenses. Hence, they can wind up costing you more than the A or the B shares. And the Securities and Exchange Commission said, no, you cannot call these things broker no load because the load is now amortized. Like that word amortized? It means stretched out over a certain amount of years. And you cannot call them if the no load funds, if the 12B1 fee is greater than 0.25%. Okay, hang on a minute. Okay, next. So we don't want an upfront fee. We don't want a back-end fee. We don't want higher annual operating expenses. So let's go with the financial advisor, Class F, Class I, Class FI. They are held in a wrap account, a management account, a wealth management account. You get no upfront fee, no back-end fee, lower annual operating expenses. But then we'll charge you enough to earn 2% for the rest of your life. Sign here, please. What's going on here? These are now what your brokers are going to show you. They charge you an extra 1 up to 2%. I saw one guy charging 0.87, whatever. But normally they charge you 1 up to 2% every year for the rest of your life. Now, if you're a broker, oh boy, would you love these things, right? Because you're going to make more money over the long term. But I don't like them. Personally, I wouldn't buy it, and I wouldn't sell it. I don't have any clients to do it. If they wanted to, I'd try to talk them out of it and explain why. And if they didn't want to do it, I'd say, what are you going to do? I'd give them to my boss, probably. Okay, so that's these guys. And then the true, as we said, true no-load funds, the darlings of the popular media. Who needs a financial advisor? Well, some people do. Some people need a financial advisor. And that doesn't mean that the overall fees are low. Some no-load funds have high annual operating expenses, and they can wind up costing you more. You've got to look at the annual operating expenses. And that's exactly what we're going to do. Here's AB. AB, that's the name of the company, believe it or not. It used to be Alliance, and Alliance got in trouble, and they merged with Bernstein, which is Bernstein, or it's a very good company, it's been around forever. So they called them Alliance Bernstein, whatever. And then I guess that was hard for people to say, so now they call themselves AB. Is that a great name? I haven't decided whether it's AB or AB. I haven't figured that one out yet. But AB Large Cap Growth Fund, a very good fund, by the way. This is a load fund. Now, you put $100 in, they're going to take $4.25. That's the sales charge. You with me? All right? That's the upfront fee on the Class A shares. Then, annually, they're going to charge you 0.53%, 53 cents for every $100 you have in the account to go to the people in the top hats. They're going to charge you 25 cents to manage the marketing and sales and distribution of the fund, and 13 cents for the lights and the accounting and the making the website and everything like that. So forever, they're going to charge you 91 cents on your $100 for every $100 you have. Now, does that sound like a lot of money? Does it? Well, it's a whole lot less than the banks or the life insurance companies charge you. But did the banks and the life insurance companies have to show you how much they're charging you? No, will they? You can ask them, and they'll say, huh? they won't know. They might get you to a person who knows, and they might say, we don't tell you. No, they'll probably tell you. And so you go to your broker. You say, Ms. Broker, I don't really want to pay that 4.25%. And what is she going to say? No problem. There's always, you notice that? There's always no problem. Whenever you want, well, I don't want to. No problem. Sit down. For you, we have the Class B. Oh, no, they got rid of them. Alliance and the rest of the industry is getting rid of these things, too. The B shares are disappearing. So they're disappearing. Closed to new investors. But they would not charge you a upfront fee. They would charge you a 4% maximum deferred sales charge. And you say to your broker, well, wait a minute, Ms. Broker. Oh, what difference does it make if I get hit in the front or get hit in the back? No problem. Sit down. Relax. You see, it's only 4% if you take the money out in the first year. And you're not going to do that, right? You're in it for the long term, right, Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Investor? Oh, yes, Mr. and Ms. Broker. And then the second year, it's 3%. Then the third year, it's 2% and 1%. And after 4 years, you don't pay a sales charge. You're in it for the long term, right? Oh, yes. Okay. Sounds good. 53 cents go to the management company. What happened? They raised it from 25 cents to a dollar. And that's how they pay the brokers. And you pay that, I think, for 8 years or 6 years. I forget. Alliance, I think it's six. And then 17 cents. So you're paying $1.70 for 8 years. And then these shares revert to the A shares. So you see, you're going to pay them now. Or are you going to pay them later? You with me? And you say, well, you know, Ms. Broker, I don't know. I don't know if we want that back-end fee because we might be moving the money out next year. Who knows? So your broker says? No problem. Your broker says? No. See, you're getting ready for the industry, folks. You're getting ready for the industry. For you, we have the Class C shares. No upfront fee, no back-end fee. Well, we charge you a percent if you take the money out within a year. But it's a mutual fund. You're not supposed to do that. 53 cents, there's the dollar. 13 cents, so $1.66, I think, for 10 years. I got to go back and look. For 10 years. So you go to your broker, you say, I don't want to pay the upfront fee, I don't pay the back-end fee, and I don't want to pay high annual operating expenses, and your broker says, no problem. For you, we have the advisor class, which used to be called Class F. You see Class F, Class I, Class FI, advisor class. No upfront fee, no back-end fee. Look at those annual operating expenses, and we charge an extra 1 or 2% for the rest of your life. What? We charge you a wealth management fee. You see, we're not your brokers. We're your wealth managers. And we want you to succeed. And when I get into conversations with other people in the profession, I say, you know, I'm still a big fan of the A-shares. Pay the upfront fee, be done with it, you get lower annual. And the one guy, I'll never forget, he had a three-piece suit, very nice suit. I don't know if he drove a Porsche or a big money waster or whatever. But he said, what are you worried about? You send him a bottle of wine on their birthday, you take them to the steakhouse, you send them a Christmas card, they'll love you. And I didn't know what to say. I really did not know what to say. And you're and it's okay that you're winding up getting a whole lot more money from them. That's okay. And I didn't say it. I should have said it, but I didn't know what to say. But this is what you're going to be shown more and more. Brokers are now not using the A shares. They're not using the C shares. The B shares are disappearing. They're going to try to sign you up for a wealth management account.
With Class A, the initial investment is the smallest number that
you're paying on also. This is the maximum. It can go down. Hang on a minute. Hang on to that. We'll get to that today. Hang on a minute, Efren.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll get to that question. We'll get to that question. Okay, so now, here's another one. This is called the New Economy Fund. Notice, they're getting rid of the B shares, too. The B shares are disappearing. This guy has a higher upfront fee, but notice it's a lower annual operating expense. You with me? So these guys hit you with an extra 1.5% upfront, but they charge you less over time. And they're getting rid of the B shares. The C shares, again, $1.59 versus 79 cents. After 10 years, these actually become these shares. And they have F1, F2, F3. But again, 56 cents Don't forget the extra 1%. Hang on a minute. We're going to get done by 10. I promise. Okay. Now, here's another mutual fund, a very famous, now infamous mutual fund, called the Legg Mason Value Trust. Actually, they changed the name to ClearBridge. Why did they change their name? This is very typical in the mutual fund industry. When a fund does badly, they will either change the name or they'll merge it into another fund. It's called burying the evidence, because they don't want you to know how badly they did. But they, for years, only had Class C, what they were called primary shares. But then when they did really badly, they went to the brokers and said, hey, we're going to add our Class A shares, we'll stop the Class C shares, we'll have Class FI, financial advisor shares, and we'll have the institutional shares. Now, how do you get them? Do you have to be institutionalized? But $1.05, and still 5.75%, $1.77 forever, they don't revert back to one of the others. $1.14 or 81 cents, hey, that's not bad. And we'll take a look at this guy later on as we go along. But now for something completely different. Have you heard of index funds? You've heard of index funds, right? Index funds are passively managed, and we'll discuss them in detail on Tuesday. But they do no research. You or I, assuming we can read a list of stocks, could run an index fund. So hence, no upfront fee, they don't need brokers, no back-end fee, 12 cents. There's no research. They better charge you a low amount. There's a $20 annual fee, 12B1 fee, if your account is less than 10,000, unless you enroll in electronic delivery, and then they waive that, this wave. And then 2 cents to run the lights and the website and all that. So 14 cents. You see what's going on? They don't have people in the top hats, so they can charge a whole lot less. They don't go knocking on the doors of Ford or GM or Honda or Toyota, because they look at the list, and if the company is in the list, they buy it. If the company ain't in the list, they don't buy it. Now, why? Big reason, they can charge a lot less, and we'll discuss why later on Tuesday. This is the most famous one. It's called the Vanguard 500 Index Fund, and it helped Vanguard become the largest mutual fund company. They overtook Fidelity, which for decades was the largest mutual fund company. And you can just hear the two words in Fidelity's boardrooms at the top of the building in Boston. The first one was O. So what did Fidelity do? They said, okay, we'll create our own index funds and we'll charge you even less than Vanguard. How low can you go? Like limbo. Are you with me? Now they have two, I think, or maybe three. They don't charge any fees. Wait a minute. What's going on here? Anybody ever hear of a loss leader? If you're in business, marketing, it's losing money to get people in the door, and then you do that. The Target does this, and Costco, and Fry's is really big. Not Costco. Costco doesn't do this. But Fry's does this. They'll get people in the door to buy, or they'll give them a strip for electric or something like that, and then they hope you buy a 96-inch big-screen TV. So Fidelity recently removed their low balance fee. It used to be $12 if your account was below $2,000. So, how are we doing for time? Not good. My apologies. This is the AB Large Cap Growth Fund, and in the prospectus, they will show you how much you would pay over 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. The Class A shares are going to be more expensive. Why? On a $10,000. I don't know why they use $10,000. That's what they use. $10,000, you've got to pay that upfront fee. So they start off being a lot more expensive. But notice what's happening over time. The B and the C shares are catching up until finally, which one costs you more over time? The B and the C shares. You with me? Now, the F shares, the advisor class, used to be called F, they wind up costing the least, but don't forget you got to pay the broker anywhere from $1,300 to $2,600. Not good, right? So which one's the best one over time? If you need a financial advisor, the A shares will normally be the cheapest route. pay the upfront fee, have lower annual offering expenses. Here's the Legg Mason Value Trust. The same thing happens. At first, the A shares wind up costing you more over the first year, but then the B and the C shares catch up until finally, we're not B shares. The C shares catch up until the C shares are more expensive. There's the financial intermediary class. They wind up costing you more because you have to pay an extra $1,300, $2,600. And the institutional class, how do you get them? Well, you have to be an institution. Are you a pension fund, a university endowment, tax-exempt charity? I know you're getting the five-minute rule, right? Hang on a minute. I've got the money pitch coming up. And do you have at least $1 million to invest with us? Oh, well. Now, here's the index 500 fund. Look, folks, look how much cheaper the index fund is. You see? That's their claim to fame. They can charge you far less. Now, they have even lowered the fees again by moving to the what they call Admiral class. But remember, the fees for passively managed index funds will almost always be less than actively managed funds. This is where you're going to look like a genius. Some 401k plans, 403b plans, will sneak high-fee index funds into the plan. And that's when you're in that meeting with the three-piece suit guy or gal telling you how wonderful these things are, and you look down and you say, and this is what I did here, Southwestern, how come the 500 index fund that they had here at Galtmore, whatever it was called, how come it's charging 91 cents, 0.91%? I mean, that's ridiculous. Why don't we go with Vanguard or Fidelity? And the guy went, you got them then. That's when they should just leave. You know, oh, this is the one. We're looking to get a cheaper one. Yeah. They did. They got a cheaper one, not much, and it was their own fund, Nationwide, on your backside. I'm sorry, on your back, Nationwide. So you're going to make them look like geniuses, right? You're going to make you look like geniuses. Make them look like fools, and then your coworkers are going to say, "Where did you learn that?" And what are you going to tell them? Right, Southwestern Community College, Business 123, Introduction to Investments. And so I wash your back, you wash your back. Okay, so now on Tuesday, we don't have time for the money pitch. Don't peek. Come back on Tuesday, and we'll finish this up, and you'll see who does best over the long term. Okay? No football, right, this weekend? Plenty of time to study. Study. Bring honor and glory.
I would say Paquito.
Ay, Paquito. Okay, now who snuck in? Who came in late? Thomas Gutierrez, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And who else? Christian Marin? No. Randall Walker? No. Oliver Segala? Ramel's here. I got you. Didn't I get you, Ramel? Yeah, I got you. Edgar Delgadillo. Okay. Edgar, come on up. Guillermo Mata. Okay, here is the chapter one packet. Here's the chapter one packet. Okay, that's the thing we did today, right here. Were you here for that?
I just enrolled in the class.
I know. You didn't get that. Okay. So do that on the web. You know where the website is?
Yeah,
there's the website. Watch the first three presentations. Do that number five. Study. Okay, got it. And you're enrolled?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yes, sir. Do you want to take the online or the face-to-face?
Face-to-face.
Okay, and your name is?
Dylan.
D-Y-L-A-N.
D-R-I-S-C-O-L-L.
Oh, a good Italian name. Just, anyway, so here's my last copy.
It's for the 8-5 class, right?
This class, right? The one we just sat in?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's my last copy. And do it now because tomorrow's the last day. I think Sunday's the last day, actually. Saturday's the last day.
Okay,
so go now. Page number. Okay, make sure you. Were you here for this guy right here?
Yeah.
Were you here for this guy?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And I'll show him wonderful stuff and everything.
Right. Cool. There you go.
Thank you.
All right, so go listen, watch the first three presentations.
Okay.
Okay, good.
They're all.
And your name is?
Oliver.
Oh, there you are. Okay, I just gave the last one out. Okay. Can you print out the... do you see the website?
Wonderful.
Yeah. Okay, on the website, you're going to want to print out... Well, you did the you did this one, right? The security pipe, this guy right here. You did that with the rest of us?
No.
You weren't here for that?
I was.
Got here a little late?
Yes.
Okay, so go do that. Over on the website, I just gave you my last one. But if you come to my office, I'll give you one. Print out one.
I know.
Go to wonderprofessor.com. There's wonderprofessor.com. You go to Business 123. Now, I sent you this link, right? So you want to listen to the first three presentations. Actually, all four presentations. You missed all four. So you can either listen to them, watch them on YouTube, watch them on 3C Media Solutions with closed caption, or you can listen to the recorded lectures. I record the lectures. The recording. Stop.